boys and girls. Nice to have you with us. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Hendrik. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. RedEyes.tv is the website where you can catch more radio, see our videos, and read our news. Don't forget, this Saturday, the 11th at 5 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, that's 11 p.m. Central European time, we have our Weekend Warriors second episode coming up live stream. This is video exclusive for RedEyesMembers.com. We have a huge list of topics to get into for this episode, and it'll be a lot of fun as usual, so don't miss it. You can find out more at RedEyesMembers.com/live or RedEyes.tv/live. Well, today we're speaking with Vox Day and Cynic in Chief. Vox Day is a writer, a professional game designer, and a three-time Billboard Top 40 recording artist. He is the author of SJW's Always Lie and Cuckservative, How Conservatives Betrayed America. Cynic in Chief is a professional computer programmer, founder of the website sjwlist.com, and an amateur poll stalker. So this show is just one segment. Both of these gentlemen are busy. Cynic is out traveling. He's on the road at the moment, and it took us some effort to get a time nailed down that worked for everyone. And so another huge disappointment that I will have to alert you to is the fact that the last 17 minutes or so of this recording was corrupted in some way. I have never in my 10 years of doing this radio show have had this particular error arise before, and it's still kind of a mystery why or how it happened. It sounds like the bitrate drops significantly, and that distortion was added onto it while we are, 20 meters underwater and doing the recording or something like that. So I'm very sorry for this. We are troubleshooting the recording equipment right now to pinpoint this and avoid it in the future. And it's funny because we just did a fundraiser for the start of our TV channel, right, about a month ago or so. And we did acquire some additional, you know, better quality equipment for the video recording portion. And so the irony is, and something that seems to happen every time, is when you fix up one part over here, another one fails over there, right? So that's where we are right now. So anyway, I just wanted to make you aware of it. We're very sorry for the, close to unlistenable quality the last 17 minutes or so. And we'll make sure that it doesn't happen again in future recordings. So thank you so much for understanding. But let's start up the show. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much to both of you for being here. Excellent having you here. Vox Day, of course, has been with us before, is with us here today again. And then we have Cynic in Chief as well. So Cynic, let me actually begin with you first. You took the initiative to set up sjwlist.com, I think after more or less an encouragement at a post that Vox Day did over at his blog. Give us the backstory on this. What is it, and why did you jump on this?
SJW List is essentially just a wiki, but it's set up to catalog the list of social justice warriors who have publicly called for censorship or deplatforming or firing people who oppose the social justice narrative, or even if they don't kowtow to it the entire way, even if they're just partially supportive of it, it's not enough for these SJWs. So we decided to make a list to sort of name them, and I almost want to say name and shame, but some people, this is a badge of honor for them.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I've had people come on and beg to be on the list. Of course, they haven't done the requisite things needed to be on, but yeah,
The official story, of course, is that, you know, since we wouldn't want to be accused of engaging in SJW-type behavior, we've decided to bill it as a job service for SJWs to help SJW-converged institutions find other SJWs to hire.
Right. I got it now. I got it.
And that's what it says on the main page. That's it. This is, if you want to hire SJWs, here's a list of them that you can go find.
Well, that's good. That's good. Tell us about the background a bit to this, Vox Day, though. What spurred you? Obviously, there's plenty of scenarios here where SJWs have gone after people. They're trying to get them fired. They're trying to depose them of their positions, get them basically ostracized for their horrible, reprehensible opinions. Is this kind of what was driving this idea?
Well, yes. One thing that I noticed in my own run-ins with SJWs, and something that I illustrate in the book SJWs Always Lie, is the fact that they always attempt to deny their actions. So, for example, after Connie St. Louis went after Sir Tim Hunt and managed to get him ejected from the University College London, she promptly turned around and said that, oh, well, I had nothing to do with it. You know, he resigned. And so the fact that he resigned under pressure, under this worldwide pressure on him, you know, suddenly they're all pretending that, oh, you know, we had nothing to do with it. He just, you know, decided to end his career of his own volition. And so the idea at the time was just that it would be desirable for someone to go out and keep track of these people, because, you know, we know who a few of them are, but there's a lot more of them. And that's why we limited it specifically to people that had actually, it's not just, you know, people who happen to have social justice ideals, but rather people who are attempting to hurt people because of a failure to abide by them.
Yeah.
And one thing that we, you know, I don't have time to pursue every, you know, random idea that I might have. And so one thing that I really encourage the Dread Elk and the other readers at the blog to do is to kind of follow the Gamergate example of just, you know, be the leader of Gamergate. You know, if something appeals to you, to go out and do it. And, you know, Cynic in Chief really put that into effect, and, you know, he ran with it, and you know, it's all his show.
Yeah, so tell us a bit more about that, Cynic. I mean, obviously you have a right on the front page of sjwlist.com, you have the complete list of SJWs. Give us a few examples and how they ended up there on the list.
Well, many of them ended up because of the initial set was from list of people who signed on petition trying to eject Curtis Yarvin, also known as Minchus Moldbug, from a conference that he was going to give. So they had. Because of his political beliefs, they had tried to get him ejected from this conference. It didn't work out, thank goodness, but a bunch of people signed on to this petition, so that was the initial set. Then later on, as evidence came to light of other people who ended up on here because of things that they've done, the list just grown and grown.
And is there... I mean, obviously, I saw you had on the website, too, that, you know, if you believe you've been put here by the wrong, you know, in wrong faith or whatever you want to call it, they could be taken off the list. Is it that easy that they just can kind of claim they did nothing wrong and then they get off? Or how would that work?
Well, because each of these have evidence with them, as long as there's evidence shown that they have attempted to get someone fired or deplatformed or called publicly for censorship, then they stay on. It's for like Ben Shapiro, who, yeah, he called for racists to be fired, but he's also has not advocated for social justice, so I made the executive decision to remove him. Or other people like Allison Bakedal, who made the Bakedal test, that was added to the list, but it didn't fit the criteria, so I removed that. People who end up in there accidentally, it was kind of a bit of a free-for-all at the beginning, so this is part of the editorial, is try and make it as accurate as possible.
Now you're the editor-in-chief.
Yeah, I'm the admin of the SJW list.
Right, right. All right, so it's Vox Day. Tell us a bit about this, too, in terms of if you believe this is a efficient way of fighting the SJWs, to kind of, well, really counter shame them, right? Of trying to keep track of them, of making sure that we know who you are and what you're trying to do here.
It's hard to know how effective it is in terms of preventing that sort of activity, but it's definitely had an impact that we can judge in the number of visits that the site is getting, in the fact that it is obviously of great concern to some of them when they find themselves on there. There have been a few people. There was one programmer who'd worked at one point or another for Google who went so far as to try to get SJW list kicked off of their internet service provider. And what was interesting was that they got busted for that, because the person working at the ISP was clearly not friendly to SJWs and promptly made public their request.
Yep.
And everything else. And so What SJWs are beginning to discover is that, not only are they not the majority, and not only are a lot of people very unhappy with their activities, but they're beginning to be subject to reprisals of their own. You know, I know of a number of companies where there are people who are, literally going around looking for SJWs and ejecting them from the companies before they can cause any trouble, because they know what's going to happen. You know, they know if they leave these people to their devices, they are going to be acting directly to the detriment of the company, because that's what SJWs always do.
Yeah, yeah. Cynic, tell us, we probably have a lot of people listening that would know of several people that could make it onto the list. How would people go about making sure someone ends up there?
You can create an account on the wiki. I have to approve it, but I've been, unless you're obvious spammer, I've been approving lists. You can also email support at sjwlist.com. I have been a little bit lax in keeping up with it, but that's a good way of letting me know when I will get around to putting it up on the list.
And then it's about submitting, obviously, evidence for the actions, right?
Yes. Screenshots, archive links. If you've got someone on Twitter, get an archive of that or a screenshot of that, and we'll put that up as supporting evidence. If you've got copies of emails, get a screenshot of that and send that. Any evidence that essentially cements the deal. Without evidence, I'm not adding anybody in.
Yeah, it's very important to link to archives too, rather than to site or to URLs that the SJW has control over.
Yeah.
Because one thing that we found is that they will absolutely attempt to sweep the evidence under the rug as soon as they realize somebody's spotted it, as soon as they realize they've come to a critic's attention. And so they'll immediately try to eliminate it and then pretend it never existed. And so that's why you should never, link directly to an SJW's blog or even to a news site that an SJW is writing for. You know, some of the SJWs on the list are various journalists at places like Forbes and a number of other places. And so it's very important to make sure that you take the link and then go and archive it at archive.is or archive.today.
Yeah, exactly. Because I would reckon as well that even submitting an image might be a little bit, I mean, I don't know if it's big enough yet to kind of attract that form of controversy, but obviously people could Photoshop images and stuff like that. So I guess it's better to have it archived as opposed to sending an image, right?
Yes.
I think it's a good idea, gentlemen. I mean, speaking of other kinds of lists as well, I think there should be several of these dedicated to the various enemies that we have of Western civilization and these kooky lefties we have out there. I think there should be several wikis, that are involved in exposing and listing various, morons and crazy people that we have out there that are basically trying to destroy Western civilization and working against us. I think this is a really good initiative, Vox Day. I bet there's probably several out there. It's just my own ignorance that I'm not aware of all of them yet. But do you know of others, Vox Day, like this?
Yeah, there's a couple other lists. In fact, Cynic has a direct link on the site of other useful lists. But there could be more. I would point out that Cynic did all the heavy lifting here. I had the easy part. But another useful thing. One thing I noticed the other day is there's a couple trolls that are often at my site. And it's easy for me to deal with them. We've got a pretty sophisticated system and moderators and stuff. And so it's very easy for us to disappear them automatically and that sort of thing. But I was at somebody else's site, and I noticed that three of the trolls who had been at my site and that we'd dealt with effectively, they were now at another alt-right site and pulling exactly the same kind of crap, posting exactly the same kind of comments. And so, perhaps that's something that might be useful is, identifying, coming up with a site that would keep track of the various pseudonyms that are habitually used by the same group of trolls that are attempting to either act as provocateurs or simply to act as disrupting agents on the various sites.
Yeah. Cynic, I think you have known aliases as well. Is that kind of an attempt to do that, to list those?
Not really. This is more of people who've changed their name or go by a different name. like Zoe Quinn, who's actually named Chelsea Van Valkenburg, but everybody knows her as Zoe Quinn. So if you're looking for it, you're going to look for Zoe Quinn, not Chelsea, but that it's a essentially multiple different names, but they're not actually online aliases.
But you know what? All this really is simply utilizing the other side's tactics against them, because this is something that the ADL and the SLPC or SPLC, whatever they are, these are tactics that they've been using for decades.
Yes.
And you know, it's rare that the conservative movement was simply too genteel and too determined to lose nobly to adopt such methods, even though they were known to be relatively effective. And so in our case, it's even more effective than it is for the left, simply because a lot of the things that they're, you know, keeping track of and keeping lists of are things that no one on the right is the least bit ashamed of. But a lot of the behavior of the left, you know, because you're often dealing with, you know, people who are mentally unstable, people who are on various, various medications and so forth, it's usually stuff that they want to hide from everyone, not just their employers, but from everyone. And so that's why I think that exposure is such an important tactic for the alt-right to use when dealing with the opponents on the left.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right, Vox Day. I think, you know, for some reason, I don't know why that is, but many, many so-called conservatives, and I want to talk about this term a bit later, harking back to the book that just came out in paperback called Cuckservative. We'll get into that later. But for some reason, people, you know, more on the right, the alt-right, or no, not the alt-right, that's different, but the classic sense of conservatism have not been involved in these kinds of things. They have, for whatever reason, just taken a back seat and somehow, I think to a certain extent, even believed that they don't hold the moral high ground. Would you agree with that, Vox Day?
I would agree with it. I would also say that there's an additional factor, which is historically, the left has been considerably younger than the right on average. And so the left has normally been able to take advantage of whatever the new technologies and mediums are more effectively than the right. That has changed now because the left is increasingly dominated by people who are older, and the right is increasingly, skilled, has the advantage technologically. I mean, there's a reason why the SJWs are so desperate to infiltrate open source and infiltrate tech and that sort of thing. And so we tend to have somewhat of an advantage. You know, there's an awful lot of people like, you know, guys like Cynic, they're reasonably technological, and so it's very easy for them to go off and do something new like this. You know, there's a lot of other things that are going on, a lot of other projects that are going on involving the Dread Ilk of my blog. And, you know, it's astonishing how much technological capacity we have just among the readership alone. And so that's a real advantage that the alt-right has. And as things have gone to a more open system, you know, with Amazon and open source and various ways around the various gatekeepers, whether it's the traditional ones or the social media gatekeepers, we are faster, we're smarter, and it gives us an advantage that, you know, the conservatives 20 years ago simply didn't have. I'm not saying that to excuse them. I don't think there's any excuse for the way that they've basically rolled over and played dead for the left.
Yeah.
But I will say that we do have some advantages that they didn't have. You know, when they were starting the Dartmouth Review, when they were, when they started National Review Online, you know, they were several steps behind the left. Now, you know, we've got everything from, you know, guys like, you know, libertarians like Peter Thiel, you know, funding million-dollar lawsuits to guys like Cynic, who are, you know, can roll off a wiki and have the whole thing up and running and 25,000 people showing up within 12 hours of him having the idea.
Yeah.
I've actually got stats on that. It's been over 2 million hits since the site's been up.
Oh, nice.
And 71,000 unique visitors.
That's great.
Excellent, excellent. Now, what you bring up here, though, is a very important point, because we are in a situation now there where I believe that many of these, you know, corporate entities and, you know, kind of the term of use and all this kind of stuff is things that is used against us. I think we're going to see a ramping up of this. Obviously, we have the situation in Europe now with YouTube, with Facebook. You know, we know that Zuckerberg was meeting with Merkel and all this stuff a while back, and now they've actually implemented, you know, these restrictions on free speech due to, you know, what they call hate and all this kind of stuff. And so what you've done, you know, Cynic, on the website as well, is to list these SJW organizations and even some events as well. But I think the technological know-how here is something that potentially we could utilize to actually build alternative platforms, right? Because, I mean, Cynic, as you list these on the site, I bet you we could add a whole bunch more there as well, that, you know, some of these bigger ones that we know are shutting people down for having the wrong opinions, right?
Oh, yes. And these aren't just people who have, well, many of them have censored people from their organization, such as GitHub and Mozilla and Reddit, but also these are organizations that have been taken over, and their focus has shifted away from their job to social justice. Like ESPN, they have ceased becoming the great sports network and are now pushing feminism and Black Lives Matter and things like that on their TV shows. They are not the market. They may still be the market leader, but they are not serving the market in the same way as they used to. And this is an opportunity for anybody to come in and take it up.
Yeah,
and you're gonna see that. I mean, you've already seen Brendan Eich come back with Brave, the browser. I'm gonna have a major announcement in August that will address another social media platform. And I happen to be personally aware of at least two other efforts that are attacking or are looking at replacing major social media platforms. And so the alternatives are going to be there. And I think it's going to be very important for the alt-right to embrace those platforms and support them, you know, enthusiastically, because that's how we're going to break the next link in the chain that the left is making use of.
Yeah, absolutely. It was at brave.com. I've not heard of that before. Excellent idea. I think we even have a couple of guys out of Sweden that launched opi.net, which stands for Our Own Place Is Here. So it's opi.net, which is basically like a social network for European culture and heritage as to take over. There's other ideas here as well, of course. If there's anybody out there listening, I think, I don't know what you think, guys, but a platform for taking payments, right? Because we know how much PayPal has clamped down. We know what some of these other payment services has done, which is kind of on the periphery of some of the alt-right. We have people like, you know, Mark Weber of the IHR, for example, that have been struggling with being shut down by credit card payment companies and stuff like that. So I think that there is a tremendous market for free speech, you know, organizations and payment services and basically everything, as the other side is just going to clamp down and lose more and more customers. What do you guys think?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I think that payment processing is a very important one. You know, there are a number of payment processors out there. I don't know whether starting up from scratch or striking an alliance with an existing one would be the best strategy. But either way, that is an area that deserves to be addressed. But, you know, we've also got to address Facebook, Wikipedia, Twitter, Goodreads, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
All of those institutions are fully converged. The only two that are, I would not describe as fully converged, are Amazon and Google, strangely enough. You know, Google is definitely on the side of the SJWs, but they're smart enough to realize that they have to tolerate everybody if they want to maintain their position. And Amazon, of course, is much the same way. You know, they have no interest in permitting somebody else to come in and do to them what Fox News did to CNN.
Right. Yeah. Well, Amazon is interesting because, I mean, they've had for example, revisionist material on there for years. And I know that the Jewish lobby has been very adamant at trying to get that down. I can't remember what Amazon did with the Confederate flag. Do you guys remember? Did they pull the sales of Confederate flags?
Of some Confederate flag things, but you know that I kind of consider to be something that got caught up in the media rush. I mean, that was an unusually big deal, simply because you know congressmen and senators and everyone were getting involved, and I think it was because it was tied to those shootings in the Charleston church. I think even Amazon would admit at this point that was a bit of a overreaction.
Right. Yeah, they did pull it here. A number of news outlets reported on it. But interestingly enough, a lot of other material, of course, that would be considered by any of these other standards to be utter, horrible and reprehensible. But that's really good. So, I mean, what's the goal here of SJW List, Cynic? What do you want it to become?
I want it to become a place where it will grow over time, but it's a list of the worst of the worst. There's all kinds of people out there who espouse social justice. Some of them will change, many of them won't, but they're not dangerous. The people who try to attack, whether physically or attack the livelihood or the human rights of people who are not espouse SJW thought, those people are dangerous. So this is a list. This is going to be growing, and it's already slowed down from what it used to be. But it's just kind of a fixture. I want it to be like the Google homepage or something like that. It got set up. It morphed a little bit, but it's kind of just stayed the same. This will be a fixture among the alt-right.
Yeah, it's really just a resource. You know, it's useful if you find yourself. Getting into it with an SJW, it's very useful to be able to check and find out if it's somebody who is a known quantity or not.
Exactly. Yeah, a reference you can go to and a growing resource as well, obviously. Well, going back to the previous show that we did, Vox Day, and your book, SJW is Always Lie, what else would you like to see in this fight of trying to, get back, if you will, and try to destabilize the success that SJWs have had in taking over many of the mainstream institutions?
Well, I would like to see the rise of alternative institutions, and we're already seeing that. You know, we're seeing the early stages of Mike Chernovich building up a media production company with Castalia House. You're seeing the rise of an alternative publishing company, growing very fast. We just recently added audiobooks to our repertoire. And we're now up to the point where we expect to be putting out 6 books a month. It's just continuing that path, continuing that growth, continuing to offer people a meaningful alternative to show them that it's not true that there's only one true way, and that is towards the total convergence of society and individual and institution to social justice ideals. And I think it's becoming increasingly obvious to people, people that a year ago would have poo-pooed the idea that SJWs were any issue. In fact, I know a year ago people were, ridiculing the notion that SJWs were a concern, because even within Gamergate, there was a big discussion about whether SJWs were the issue or whether we were, tightly focused on ethics and game journalism. And as it happened, the side concerned with SJWs won out. But now we've seen SJWs go after Warhammer, tabletop miniatures. We've seen them go after comics. And nobody anymore believes that their hobby or their interests are safe. They know that the SJWs are going to come after it sooner or later. And so that's why you're seeing this growing backlash. And that's why you're seeing more and more people being willing to stand their ground and just say, I don't care what you say. I'm not going to change my book. I'm not going to change my comic. I'm not going to change my game. in order to meet with your approval.
Yeah, exactly. I think also that they are changing as an entity. They are transforming themselves all the time, and we have a good word in Sweden called opinion corridor, right? It's a very narrow shaft that you can travel in, so to speak, and that seems to be getting narrower and narrower all the time. And we've seen examples where, you know, SJWs who are on the fringe here or have an opinion that all of a sudden becomes outdated, if you will, by their standards, they are more than happy to turn on their own, right? There's an internal fight that is going on within the SJW insanity as well, right?
No, absolutely. It's something that I describe in SJWs Always Lie as the dynamic SJW narrative. The SJW narrative is always mutating. And, if you think about SJWs, it's most useful to think of them like a school of fish. And each one of them is very, very concerned about and very paying very close attention to the one next to them, so that when the school turns, the SJW wants to make sure that he turns with the school and that he's not left out, because if he makes the wrong turn, if he takes the wrong position, he's going to get devoured.
Yeah, that's right. So I would like to talk about the alt-right a little bit, and you know, we can tie in the conservative phenomena into this too and talk about your book a bit, Vox Day, but the viable alternative, if you will, to all of this insanity has obviously been the alt-right. It's been getting out there like nothing else. It's been tremendously attractive to young people. It's funny. It, frankly, as a movement, doesn't give a shit about any of these taboos. It goes against all these things. And that's obviously why you've had a conservative, an old guard conservativism that has turned against the alt-right as well. And you've actually covered this, Vox Day, on your blog recently in terms of, PJ Media and, of course, National Review Online and all these, kind of outlets. Explain that dynamic for us a bit, if you can. But what is it that they don't understand about the alt-right? We've seen a number of these articles come out where they try to, say what it is or pin it in some way. And usually they fail miserably at understanding what it is.
Well, their biggest failure to understand the alt-right is their failure to understand themselves. Now, I realize that sounds a little bit zen, but it's really based on something Sun Tzu said. He wrote The Art of War, and he said that if you know yourself and you don't know your enemy, or vice versa, you will lose 50% of the time. But if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you will not lose. And the reason that conservatives have failed for so long, the reason they've lost for decades, is because they have never understood themselves. Conservatism is not a coherent ideology. Conservatism is fundamentally a attitude. If you trace the roots of it, which Red Eagle and I did in our book Cuckservative, what you find is that conservatism is actually relatively modern. It's something that Russell Kirk attempted to sort of describe in his book The Conservative Mind. And what's kind of fascinating about it is that when you look at the six canons that he laid out, they're not really positions that are staked down in anything meaningful. They're really all relative to something else. They're fundamentally an attitude. And the problem with that is that the attitudes is prone to shift. There's nothing pinning it down. There's nothing timeless about it. There's nothing objective about it. And so, that is what has created the phenomenon of the conservative being a liberal from 20 years before. And so what happened, and then on top of that, back in the late 60s and early 70s, you had a group of liberal Democrats, most of them Jewish, but not all, led by Norman Podhoretz and Irving Kristol. And they decided that the Republican Party was a better vehicle for their opposition to the Marxist form of the left, And, you know, they were not Marxists, but they were left. They were I believe, from the Trotskyite tradition.
Yes.
And so they ended up essentially taking over the Republican Party and the conservative movement. And that's why you see people like Bill Kristol, who's Irving Kristol's son, and people like John Podhoretz playing a major role. And they methodically, beginning with Bill Buckley's purge of the John Birch Society, they methodically purged every form of conservatism that they didn't approve of. And so they got rid of Joe Sobrin, they got rid of Pat Buchanan, they got rid of, less successfully with Pat Buchanan, they got rid of Paul Craig Roberts. In more recent years, they've pushed out John Derbyshire, they've pushed out Mark Steyn, they've pushed out Ann Coulter, et cetera.
Yeah.
There's actually more writers, more notable writers that they've pushed out of the conservative movement than they were willing to keep in it. And if you read an article called The Neoconservative Persuasion by Irving Kristol, it's very meaningful because he says quite openly that their goal was to transform both the Republican Party and the conservative movement against their will and turn it into something that it was not, something that was much more interventionist, much more big government friendly, considerably more concerned about Israel than you would expect a country on the other side of the world to be.
Yeah.
And so that's what's changed. Now, what the alt-right is the alt-right is basically a group of younger people, more or less, who had all, they're not attached emotionally to the conservative movement. You know, the people that were pushed out, the Derbyshires and whatever, they were still attached to it in many ways. They knew them socially. They were emotionally considered themselves Republicans and conservatives. The younger crowd never did. So the younger crowd doesn't care about the approval of the establishment. And so that's what has completely changed the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Very interesting. The exportation of democracy, if you will, that the neocons adopted. And as the left has pushed more towards the left, this so-called conservative movement have responded by moving with it, moving more to the left. And I guess then, Vox, some would argue, well, if the guard of the neoconservative movement kind of came from a Trotskyite background, then this wasn't any accident that they moved more towards the left. So you know, in terms of American society, especially, that has overall moved more towards the left at the same time as they've upheld kind of a, as you said, an interventionist policy, huge military interventions around the world, very pro-Israel. So it's like one method for Americans and then another method for example, Israel, right? Who can build a wall, for example, without any issue and any problem. But when Trump wants to do it, everyone in the so-called conservative movement is attacking him for it, right?
Right. And that's the other bit. You know, it was interesting. We had a conversation on the blog today. One of our authors, who is, very, I would say, sort of old school conservative, in the best sense of the word, he was saying, what changed? He said, why are so many of you guys suddenly, using conservative almost as it's a pejorative? You know, he said that it was very noticeable to him just in the last 4 months. And, I said, what changed is that the reaction to Donald Trump, the Never Trump movement, and all the criticisms of Trump have made it very, very clear to everybody on the alt-right that when push comes to shove, many of the conservatives are actually not pro-American. They're not nationalists. They're not concerned with the U.S. national interest. They're more committed to their international left-wing ideology than they are to the country. And so, and a lot of people are obviously rejecting that because what horrifies the conservatives is that they were riding along on, they rode along on the tie between nationalism and conservatism. A lot of people considered them identical. Well, now we've realized that was just coincidence. They just happened to be running in parallel, and we're beginning to see a separation of the nationalist American side from the nominally conservative side, which, as we said, is now being driven by the neocons.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Feel free to jump in here too, Cynic, if you have anything to add here. But the alt-right, you wrote on your blog here, I think it was a few days ago, the alt-right believes in three things: nationalism, Western civilization, and winning. I would add the fourth one, maybe dank memes. And, you know, and you wrote, everything else is negotiable or a means to one of those three ends. We aren't conservatives. We aren't philosophers. And we don't care about the Constitution, the rights of man, the Enlightenment, the Holocaust, or anything else with capital letters that is likely to get in the way. I think that's true, you know, and I think alt-right is therefore much more effective than the conservative movement. But where's this going to leave them? Obviously, this is going to, whether the conservatives like this or not, this is going to outrun them. We have the young people on our side. It is going to transform it. I think you wrote this as well, in the same way that the Republicans transformed the Whigs, right? This is just the way of nature. Keep up or be get out, right?
Absolutely. And I think what you're going to see is, I think you're suddenly going to see a lot of the conservative figures suddenly declaring themselves to be alt-right and attempting to maintain leadership positions. I think that you're going to see a lot of attempts to marginalize the, you know, existing, we'll say, leaders, although there are no leaders of the alt-right. You know, it's just like with Gamergate. The other side, the media kept trying to figure out who the leader of Gamergate was so that they could attack him and destroy him. And, you know, I think that, you know, I mean, Gamergate was not a right-wing thing. There was actually more leftists in Gamergate than right-wingers. But, you know, we all managed to come together just fine because, you know, I mean, we're all just pro-games, right? And I think that a lot of people in the alt-right, you know, not just people like me who were actual Gamergaters, but I think a lot of people learned from what they saw. And I think they realized that you don't want to elevate a leader. You don't want to turn it into some sort of centralized movement. You know, you want to allow all the different diverse elements of it, you know, from the most, you know, Sieg Heil 1488 neo-Nazi to the Jewish filmmaker who is, you know, pro-Israel, but even more pro-America. You know, the alt-right is actually much broader in some ways than conservatism, because nationalism is something that every single person from every single group can relate to. You know, it is in our interest as you know, as an American nationalist or as a European nationalist to support Japanese nationalists.
Yeah.
You know, it's in our interest to support Russian nationalists and Greek nationalists, because the other side is trying to enslave everybody. You know, and so there's no need. I mean, it's kind of funny because, you know, on my blog, you know, we've got guys who consider themselves to be literal Nazis, and we've got guys who are, you know, hardcore Israeli nationalists, you know, hardcore Zionists, and they get along just fine because the Israeli guys want to be in Israel. They want Israel to remain Israel. They don't want Israel to become, you know, some sort of UN governed state where the UN will decide how many Palestinians or how many Ethiopians are allowed to live there. But, you know, the issues that they've got in that regard are exactly the same as the Okinawans have. You know, the Okinawans don't want the Americans there. The Germans don't want the Turks there. The yeah. Russians don't, you know, everybody is facing exactly the same issue. And that's why I think that the alt-right has a structural advantage over both conservatives and SJWs, because at the end of the day, everybody just really wants to be left alone with their own kind, with their own family.
Yeah, absolutely. It's anti-globalism, you know, and it's decentralized. Something I mentioned for some time, and it's something which is, in certain instances, it can be, you know, maybe some downsides to it, but usually it's a very positive thing. And one of the funny things that occurred, is, of course, is when these so-called conservatives are trying to understand it, there was a couple of articles from PJ Media recently, two by Walter Hudson, three ways to understand the racist alt-right, and the other one was the alt-right is evil and must be stopped. And then I think it was a follow-up one by Michael van der Gallien, which I believe is, he converted to Islam, I think, which is kind of interesting. But he wrote, "The mask comes off. The alt-right is racist to its core." How is this going to impact what PJ Media is doing, do you think, Voxday?
Well, I think that it's a very difficult case for them to make. I mean, look at who they complain about. You know, on the one hand, they're bitching about the alt-right being racist, right? And so then who do they complain about? They complain about Milo. Well, you know, Milo's Greek and Jewish, and, you know, he's not even properly alt-right. He's just alt-right sympathetic. They complain about me. You know, I'm a Native American. It's very difficult for them to call me a white supremacist because, you know, not only am I Native American, but my great-grandfather rode with Pancho Villa. He's Mexican, you know. And that is very, very difficult for them to make it stick because, you know, they're only looking at one. You know, are there openly racist elements of the alt-right? Of course there are. You know, there's openly racist elements of SJWs, of conservatives, of liberals. You know, you can find it everywhere.
They're anti-white, all of them, you know.
Exactly. And so the point is that all those words is meaningless rhetoric that works on conservatives. You know, the conservatives are using it against the alt-right because it works so well against them. And they don't really, you know, I mean, honestly, it does not bother me in the slightest when someone is, you know, calling me racist or whatever, that sort of thing. It's totally meaningless. They might as well call me a Martian.
Yep. You know? Doesn't work anymore. Doesn't work, folks.
And that's the key thing for, I think that that's, again, it's something that has come about organically just because we've all been called so many names so many times that we've just gotten numb to it. But it's more than that because looking back at Gamergate, you know, I mean, as much as the alt-right has been attacked, nobody had as much thrown at them in as short a time as Gamergate did. I mean, you know, it wasn't just racist. I mean, we were being accused of, you know, rape and kidnapping and driving people from their homes. And I mean, literally TV shows, what was it? Special Victims Unit, actually came up with a TV show in a hurry that made Gamergate the bad guys. You know, they even had a big thing where, you know, Ice-T like shot the guy and then said, "Game over, man." You know, it was really cheesy.
But
the point is that nobody blinked. I mean, there wasn't, I can't think of a single Gamergater who said, you know, "Oh no, they're calling me names. I will stop. I will change my allegiance now." And again, I think that, you know, for a lot of people that saw that, it really made them realize, you know what? I don't need to back down and explain myself. You know, the minute that somebody calls you whatever, you're racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, whatever. The minute that you say, no, I'm not, you've lost because you're on your back feet and that's all they're looking for. They're just looking to unsettle you and drive the narrative. And so when you just ignore it, you know, somebody said to me, "What is the correct response to 'you're a racist'?" I said, "Well, the correct response is 'you're a pedophile.'"
Right.
And they said, "Well, how does that make sense?" I said, "It doesn't make sense. It's rhetoric." You know, I said, right. What do you think the average person does when you say, "Yeah, you're a pedophile"? They immediately go onto their back feet and start explaining that they're not, and then you just start doing to them what they were trying to do to you.
Well, of course. I mean, from one hand, they say, don't label and be tolerant of the things you don't understand, and then they do exactly that. And they've overused all these labels. They've exhausted these epithets. And I think they have then also helped to make the alt-right stronger. It's kind of like that bacteria antibodies phenomena, fighting and transforming or mutating to try to overcome the other. So going on from that, what is the next step in this process? Because I think we saw something interesting with this phenomenon of the coincidence detector, right? I mean, this was
all just one day, boom, from Central Command, it was all over the place from, ADL to SPLC covered it. You had the Jewish Daily Forward, of course, and all these things. And then the response seemed to have been, well, okay, well, we're cool with it, right? We can hang with it. So they actually started to self-identify and put brackets or parentheses around their own names, for example.
They were not cool with it. They were trying to reclaim it. But again, it shows that they don't understand how it works because, like I pointed out, what are they going to do for a sequel? Start putting yellow stars on their clothing?
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
It's probably not the best idea. But, and the thing is that they are so out of control and so rocked back on their heels with an inability to understand what's going on. One of the guys that I consider one of my social media allies, he's that Jewish filmmaker I mentioned, Lauren Feldman. And, he was coming back, he was, actively criticizing the ADL for what they were doing. And they promptly declared that he and one other guy couldn't be Jewish and were not Jewish. And so, he's been hitting them hard, demanding an apology and all this kind of stuff. Using all of their techniques, their common tactics against them. And that's the beauty of the situation is that, they're so tied up and bewildered by what's going on that they're just lashing out and attacking everybody.
Yeah, they are. Hey, Sunik, let me ask you a bit here to bring you back into the conversation a bit. When, I don't know if you self-identify with the alt-right or whatever, but when did you become aware of it? Have you been kind of involved in this for a long time? Or tell us about that.
I've been slowly wading into it since early 2013, but only within the past couple of years. Just a little bit after Gamergate did I really start to get into the alt-right. And even then, I'm still kind of one of the very minor figures, if much of a figure at all. But I like it because, well, you hit on it with the dank memes. It's fun.
Yeah. It's
all right. We treat it like a game. You go around and beat up all kinds of enemies, but in the end, it's just fun. And the SJWs, they take their fight way too seriously. It's not that we don't take us seriously, but they can't have any fun with it. A lot of them are, well, frankly, pathetic people in the first place. And this is a way for them to try and spread that misery around. But all right, we're having a good time with it. Don't be deceived.
Yeah, and I think you touched on this Vox Day in one of your other posts again on your blog. You talked about the attitudes of not being hopeless and not being, a downer to a certain extent. I mean, again, we know, just as you said, Sunik, we know what is at stake here. We know what's happening to Western civilization. We know how Europeans particularly are being displaced with the migration crisis, the invasion that's ongoing in Europe. The stakes are higher than ever. But I think on some level, we've realized that we've tried so many different ways and capacities, and there's a lot of these other nationalist movements that have been trying for years in different ways. And despite that it's a lot of humor and there's a lot of fun things behind the alt-right, it does seem to advance the politics in our favor, right? It does seem to pull that Overton window more to the right.
Yeah, and that's part of the memes and the trolling people. This is all a way of rhetoric to shove people who are maybe not be swayed by logic. Logic is on our side in the first place, but that hasn't affected them in the past 50 years. But reaching out and ridiculing them and firing back with calling them a pedophile and they call us a racist, that will work. And Gamergate kind of kicked it off, and we're taking it up and taking it further and keeping it going.
Very good. Let's talk about your book a bit, Vox Day, the new one, Cuckservative. It's has been the number one seller in political philosophy and nationalism for how long is it now that's been on Amazon?
It came out in May.
So it's been...
I'm sorry. That's the paperback. I don't even. Oh, it came out in December 2015.
Okay, there you go. And so it's been trending quite high. Tell us a bit about the book and what some of the aims are with getting this out there.
Well, the main goal was for us to point out to Americans what had been done to them since 1965. And to point out that the invasion that the USA has experienced is the largest human migration in human history. And, it is going to have massive, massive effects. It is probably going to break the country apart into two or more pieces. And we wanted them to understand what was going on and who was responsible, not just in terms of who was primarily responsible, but who allowed it to happen. And we wanted to show that the conservative movement had allowed it to happen. And so, my co-author is also an American Indian, obviously, John Red Eagle. And, so we had a certain rhetorical immunity to the, you're just a bunch of white nationalists, white supremacists, blah, blah, blah. Because we were able to point out, look, our people are living on reservations. And that's where you're going to be, where your kids are going to be in 200 years if you don't wake up to this and do something right. with it. Yeah. And so, and that's a pretty powerful message for people to hear. And, it was interesting, the cover of the book has an American flag, but we actually replaced the white stripes with the color of the various minority groups according to their percentage of the population. And it's really kind of sobering when you look at that and you see less than barely half of the white stripes are still white. We do have a little small dark red one that's for us. And that's even more sobering in a way if you think about the fact that that's the original population there.
Tell us about this though. How do you think if the demographic change in the way that the current trends indicate, what is that going to mean for the American Indians? Are they going to be treated as well under those conditions? If we look at the more modern age of how they're more or less treated today, will that be upheld or is it going to get worse for them as well, do you think?
I think it kind of depends on which groups. I mean, frankly, my tribe is very small and our reservation is pretty small, and so I have a feeling that, they'd probably be pretty much screwed. Some of the larger tribes, I suspect, they'll probably be very sought-after allies because they're very, very wealthy as a result of their sovereign status and their casinos.
Did you ever see, by the way, how whites took over America, the cartoon?
No, I did not.
Oh, I've got to send you that. It's hilarious. It puts this, what you're talking about now, kind of in that context of how of turning this idea of the 1965 Immigration Act into and kind of applying it to the past, but it does so in the form of criticizing, of course, the ongoing, kind of migrant invasion. So let's send that to you. It's hilarious. But yeah, this is good stuff, gentlemen. Let's see what else we should cover here before we wrap things up for this time. I don't want to take too much of your time. I know you're both very busy here, but let's shift over to you, Sunik, here. What else should we mention about sjwlist.com, and what else is it that you're kind of working on or concerned with right now in terms of how things are changing and what we can do to make things better, basically?
I'm poking around a few different projects I've got. One of them is trying to, one of my friends got booted off of YouTube for completely bogus reasons. So I'm looking away to try and host videos on an alternative platform, although there's a couple good ones out there already. As far as SJW List itself goes, mostly just keeping it up to date. I would like to thank my editors, Lee Peppermint, SJW Hunter, Steel Palm, and Wear Puppy. They've done most of the heavy lifting. I've done all the technical stuff with the site, but those editors, they've been the driving force behind keeping the list up to date, handling new submissions, and making sure the links are all properly correct and undoing vandalism. And I give them credit for most of the work behind the actual content of the site.
Very good. Well, it's a good initiative. You know, keep up the good work, and I hope we'll see more, you know, lists like it. I hope it's going to be the people submit, and then we get more entries into it as well, of course. Again, and the website for that is sjwlist.com. Well, you're on Twitter as well, Cynic. Do you have any other websites you'd like to give out, or how people can get in touch with you if they want to?
I've got cynicandchief.com, but there's not much of a website up there right now. You can find me on Twitter at cynicandchief, all one word.
We have the link after that. All right, Vox Day, same question to you in terms of what are you looking at next year, and what are some of the recommendations you have for people out there fighting the good fight, and in terms of where we need to take things in terms of strategy and next step here?
Well, anybody who wants to know what I'm up to can just stop by the blog. That's probably the easiest way. But what I would encourage people to do is to stop waiting for permission and stop waiting for somebody else to do something. You know, one thing that I learned that was very important from Mike Cernovich was he said, you know, every day I ask myself, who can I help today? And, you know, I've tried to adopt that philosophy to a certain extent. You know, every day, you know, who can I go out? What ally can I help today? You know, who might be able to benefit from a link or from a retweet or whatever? In the case of those who are people who are, you know, not involved or who don't have a, you know, some sort of large site or something, volunteer. You know, we have so many volunteers. The Dread Elk, there are probably, at this point in time, I would say there are probably 350 people who are volunteering doing something, making things happen. You know, Cynic in Chief is just one example. The editors that he mentioned are just five more examples. You know, we've got the guys who are running the Castalia House blog. We've got the guys who are helping with the publishing stuff. The guys who are helping with some of these other projects we haven't announced yet. Get involved. You don't need to be an expert in anything. You know, find somebody who is, find a writer that you like and ask them if you can proofread his stuff. You know, just stop waiting. You know, if you're concerned about this stuff, and you should be, then, you know, do something, even if it's as simple as buying a book and giving it to a friend. You know, the key thing is to take that first step. You know, for me, I didn't mean for the, you know, the blog has like, you know, 75,000 page views a day now. You know, that's not something that I ever even thought about for a second. The only reason I started a blog was because I was tired of getting the same questions emailed to me and having to answer the same question to multiple people. So I thought, well, if I start a blog, I can just put the mail, you know, the mailbox up there, and then not have to deal with, you know, the emails. And that one little step, you know, has led to, you know, everything from the blog to the publishing company, the books. I mean, the fact that I'm talking to you right now on this show is a direct result of that one little step. And so, you know, I'm not the leader of the alt-right. I'm not the leader of anything. Well, okay, I'm the Supreme Dark Lord of the Evil Legion of Evil, but that's different. but the point is that you're right. This is a decentralized entity. This is a decentralized movement, and every single person who is sympathetic to it can actively participate and should actively participate in it. And, you know, there's no limit to what can be accomplished. If you think about it, I mean, you know, how many apostles did Jesus require to absolutely shake the world? You know, he had 11 plus Paul, so that's 12. You know, there's a lot more than 12 people who are sympathetic to the alt-right. And so, you know,
You're saying we don't need a majority on our side. That's what you're saying.
No, we don't need a majority on our side. We don't need to waste our time doing exactly the same, you know, trying to, you know, start a little political company, a little political party, and play by the rules and all that sort of thing. You know, that's not necessary. That's not the right way to go. What exactly is the right way to go? How, you know, events are going to partially dictate that. You know, there's no need for a plan. There's no need for, an organization and a leader and all that sort of thing. The important thing is to simply take that first step, and then see where it goes, see where it leads you. But, the important thing is to not do nothing.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. I think those are really, really important suggestions. Be a cell, if you will, in that decentralized organism that has become the alt-right. Have fun, but fight hard. Dedicate some of your time if you can't dedicate, the majority of it, but do something. And I think as well that the alt-right is a bridge, right? It's something that takes people from one side, if you will, to another. I think there's going to be many different movements and who knows, maybe even politically at some point that is going to be coming out as a consequence of what the alt-right has managed to do and turn into. So I don't think we need to feel that we need to control it too much in that regard. It needs to kind of have that space to grow and turn into whatever it needs to become. But hopefully out of that, something really, really productive will come. So I'm encouraged. I'm positive in terms of how things have developed here in the last year or so. I mean, tremendous amount of people have been coming our way, if you will. And of course, very aided by Trump in this effort. And actually, let me ask you guys about that. Rockstay, Trump, is he going to get in or not? What do you think?
I think that he is going to win simply because Hillary Clinton is possibly the worst candidate who has ever been nominated she's a worse candidate than Dukakis or Mondale ever were.
Sidney, what do you think?
I give him about a 70% chance. Clinton certainly is weak, and Trump has shown himself to be a masterful persuader in the past. That said, do not underestimate the Clintons' ability to cheat or lie or do whatever they need to do in order to get back into power.
Yeah, rig or assassinate. They've assassinated in the past, by the way, Vince Foster and all these people. There's tremendous dirt on the Clintons, by the way, for those who want to find out. There's a really good video online called The Clinton Chronicles. Vince Foster shows their good old days in Little Rock, Arkansas. They're tied in with the drug shipments and everything to the airport there. It's just extraordinary how corrupt the Clintons are. So I think Trump will do better against Hillary than he would have done against Bernie, to be honest.
And the most, my 30% is also including if Hillary drops out for some reason or other and Joe Biden or somebody else, an unknown quantity, jumps into that. That's more likely than Clinton actually winning it.
What do you think, Roxanne?
Oh, I think that Hillary will stay in, and I think she'll lose.
Mm. All right, very good. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Let's get your details as well, Roxanne, in terms of your websites, your Twitter, and if there's anything else you'd like to notify us about that you have upcoming.
It's pretty simple. Roxday.blogspot.com, and Twitter is just Roxday.
All right, very good. And where can people pick up the books? Same blog?
Yeah, you'll find them there. Or just go on to Amazon and type in Cuckservative. There's not really a great deal of books using that title yet.
Not yet. Don't get there. Oh, that's good. Congratulations on getting the first book out by that name, by the way. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate your time today. Please keep up the good work. Excellent to have you here. Thank you so much again for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, we're back to normal audio then. Again, we're sorry about the quality at the end, as I explained in the beginning of the show. We are troubleshooting this right now to avoid it in future recordings. So thank you so much for understanding. All right, well, don't miss our live show this Saturday, the 11th at 5 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. That's 11 p.m. Central European time. RedIceMembers.com/live or RedIce.tv/live has more information for you. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with more radio on Monday again with James Sears. But of course, we will see you on Saturday. Take care. Have a good day.